Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is brought to you by Green and Black's Velvet Edition, a delicious range of sumptuously smooth dark chocolate. You're listening to the Irish Times Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle. Just in case you didn't know, the Irish Times is producing a daily Confronting Corona podcast with updates on all the developments in this constantly changing situation. You can find it on irishtimes.com, and it really is worth listening to. Since we last spoke, 17 more people have died from COVID-19 in Ireland, bringing the total to 72 deaths. We're thinking of all those people, of course, their families and everyone affected. And there are now 3,235 confirmed cases, but obviously there are even more than that, as not everyone has been tested yet. Ryan Tuberty is another RTE broadcaster who's been confirmed as having the virus, and we wish him all the best. He was playing a blinder on his morning radio show, especially with positive stories about corona before he got sick, which I know my kids definitely need those positive stories, so we wish him a speedy recovery. Wanted to bring you an email that we got. We've no pandemic poetry for you today, but we did get a lovely email from a woman called Tila in America. She said she's listening to the podcast from the state of Tennessee in the US, and she wanted to write and say thank you because she's a community theatre actor, or she was before all this anyway. And she wanted to make sure that her Irish accent was as authentic as possible. And she says, I thought that a good way to do that was to listen to Irish women talk. I searched Irish women podcast, and this was the one that immediately appeared. So that is how I started listening to your wonderful podcast. It has helped tremendously with the accent. But beyond that, I have to say, I'm so glad that I found the podcast, because not only do I love to hear Irish people talk, I hope that's not a dumb American thing to say, not at all, Tila, but as a recently awakened feminist, I absolutely love the content. You're such a joy to listen to. Thank you so much for all you do. And that's from Tila Kelly. Well, we're delighted with that. And thank you very much, Tila. And I hope you're getting on okay there in America, which, as we know, has so many cases at the moment, and a very worrying time for everyone there and, of course, all over the world. Now, later on in this episode, we're going to be talking about food. We're going to be talking about lockdown larders and all your pandemic pantries, the various snacks and dishes that are getting you through this time. Never mind the pandemic, there is a banana bread epidemic sweeping the kitchens across the country. Food is something that we can control at this time when we feel a loss of control. And a lot of people have hardly opened their eyes in the morning before they're thinking about what to make for dinner. So we'll be talking food, glorious food, in a while with Roz Purcell and Catherine Cleary, who are giving us their take on foods that can make us feel better now. Crisps is my offering. Lots and lots of crisps and giant pots of soup. But first, I caught up with one of our regular contributors, Tanya Sweeney, who is in self-isolation with her partner and her 14-month-old daughter. Tanya Sweeney, we wanted a bit of an insight into your lockdown life. You've come on the you've come on the podcast for us before, talking about many other things, but we're all in this very surreal situation. So how is it for you, Tanya? Tell us first own setup there.
Well, I'm living in my two up, two down house in Stonybatter, and I live with my fiance and my soon to be 14-month-old daughter, you know, so it's the three of us, and our various family members are scattered across the country, so we don't really see them, you know, and we're just sort of trying to sort of not kill each other, you know, just try and work and get a bit of fresh air and try and find a new normal, or find, as I'm calling it, you know, our feet on the seabed a little bit. You know, I think for the first couple of weeks, it really felt like we were in a tumble dryer, didn't know what way was up. And and work was, I think as well, there was so much headspace going to, like, you know, anxiety and uncertainty. You just went to bed absolutely wrecked, you know. So I think we're starting to adapt a little bit now. I think we're on week three of sort of, you know, not seeing anybody, you know. So we're just this tight little unit at the moment. And, you know, that obviously has its advantages and disadvantages, you know.
Just on that tight little unit, that sounds quite idyllic. But if you're anything like me, you have been, I was writing today in my column about just being quite snappy and angry, and I think I'm at that phase. Have you gone through a phase like that?
Oh my god, I listen, I read your column this morning, Roisin, and I was like punching the air going, oh, it's not just me, someone else is snapping five times a day, thank god, you know. And it's great, and you're right, you know, it's not about when have you snapped, it's how many times have you snapped. Yeah. Because if you haven't snapped yet, like, you know, well done on getting that lobotomy in before the lockdown, you know. But yeah, it's I think it's a very normal. I mean, like, this is such an unusual situation. You know, you're basically being told to stay inside your house. I mean, I think as a new parent, it really helps to, you know, go out sometimes with your mates and just let off that bit of steam, have a couple of glasses of wine, or just have your own time to read a book or something. Like, it's very, very hard to harvest away that, you know, space and time for yourself right now, you know. Mm. And I think we found it very difficult. I think the first week, you know, myself and my partner, you know, we were getting very snippy. And one Saturday anyway, I went completely postal, you know, for over nothing, you know. And, you know, we started having those conversations where it's like, you do realize you slam the toilet door or this, yes, the toilet seat down. You know, you do that. Like, we're sort of at that point where we're like, do you realize you do that? Like, we're getting very sort of like, you know, but I mean, I think that's kind of normal. It has to be to get through this, you know. I mean, I'm seeing people on social media and they're having a great time, and they're in their lovely garden and they're having their al fresco suppers and they're doing board games with the kids. And, you know, that's brilliant if that's your life, you know, but it's definitely not my reality at the moment, you know. I mean, I'm dressed at the moment.
Well done. Well done. Actually, I'm going to get them to put in a little round of applause right here for later on when we edit this together.
Brilliant. Well, I tell you, I put shoes on today and I was like, you know what? I'm actually killing it at this lockdown scenario. Like, this is great, you know. And yeah, I mean, it's funny because I've always worked from home, you know, so I'm used to that. But there's just something different now in, you know, not being able to go out or, you know, see your friends for coffee or go out and follow a story or, you know, just go anywhere that you want, you know. I mean, the world got very, very small for a lot of people in a very short amount of time. You add in, I mean, it's like Christmas, you know, the way for the few days of Christmas where you can't really go anywhere. It's like that, you know, except there's no drambuie and there's no like Sound of Music on the telly. And that's tough to, you know, that's really tough. And there's all this talk about there's going to be lots of, you know, a spike in divorce rates. I mean, I've absolutely no doubt that's going to be the case, you know, because, you know, when you're in close quarters with people, you know, you really do see, you know, the best and the worst of people, you know. So and in these extraordinary situations, I think a lot of people will be kind of going, gosh, is this the right relationship for me, you know, which is unfair. It's probably not the right thing to do, but it's human nature, really, isn't it?
Tanya, what about the dark side of it, which is sort of all pervasive and the death toll rising and the number of cases? Yeah. Now, we occasionally have good news where we sort of hear, right, maybe we're doing better than Leo Vrecker and the others thought we would be doing. So that's great. But at the same time, you just know that these funerals are going to start happening and people that we know are going to be affected. Does that kind of creep into your consciousness?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that was for the first 2 weeks, I was very sort of teary and I didn't really know why. Mm. And very sort of anxious. And now I understand why that is, because, you know, you start to realize that, you know, for some people, they have hugged their relatives, their loved ones for the last time, and they may not even know that yet. And, you know, the funerals, I mean, I've been keeping an eye on social media about the funerals that have happened. I can't even imagine, as someone who has had the funeral of a parent already, I can't imagine what it's like to not have that community around you at that time, you know, to have to say, right, we're going straight to the, you know, a graveyard and there's going to be 10 mourners dotted around the, you know, the graveyard. I mean, I can't even imagine what that experience is like. for somebody who is mourning a loved one at the moment, you know, and to know that, you know, people are dying alone, they're dying afraid, and it seems unstoppable, you know. And I think that looms very, very hard and heavy in a lot of minds at the moment, you know. And I mean, there will come a day, I suppose, when we're on the downside of the curve, and I can't wait for that. But I mean, right now it's a very, very dark time, you know, when those kind of thoughts start to you know, when you think those kind of thoughts, really, you know. I don't know, do you feel the same, Roisin?
Yeah, I do. And I really relate to what you said about the teariness, because I haven't had a full on cry yet. I'm kind of waiting to see when that happens. But I've definitely felt that like tearing up at weird moments and wondering what the hell is going on. And I think it's just that it's the overwhelmingness of what's to come as well, of what's happening that we don't know is happening yet as well. Tanya, I take it that you're from what you said earlier, that you're not a fan of all this productivity porn that seems to be permeating the Instas and everything.
Absolutely. And it's funny because, like, Una Mullally put up a tweet a couple of weeks ago, which I thought was absolutely spot on. And she said, you know, we have just left behind a cult of productivity and busyness. And it was like a hamster wheel for a lot of people, caused a lot of anxiety, a lot of exhaustion. And we are still trying to bring that into this new scenario when we are being given the chance to let ourselves entirely off the hook and reevaluate the hamster wheel element of our lives, you know. And I mean, I find it funny that people are trying so hard. I mean, what for? Why are you, you know, who are you doing this for? I suppose if you're doing it for yourself, or you're doing it for the benefit of your kids, that's wonderful. But, you know, I think I see a lot of the social media posts of people's incredibly tidy houses, and, you know, they're dressed to the nines. And I think a lot of people are feeling very sort of not inadequate, but they're kind of going, I want to fix myself a gin and tonic at 10 o'clock. And I'm obviously not doing this isolation thing properly, you know. And, you know, there's that cult of, you know, and I think women really, you know, do befall it, the cult of self-betterment and the cult of self-perfection, you know. And now is the opportunity to really let all of that go, you know. I mean, I'm taking the opportunity to just completely slob out, you know. And yeah, you know, and hopefully in a week or two it'll all fall into place, you know, and we'll understand, you know, that we don't need to keep, you know, for some people, obviously a schedule and keeping kids occupied is paramount. Mm. But I mean, my kid is plopped in front of CBeebies morning till night, and I'll deal with the consequences later, you know, but it's working for me right now. Let me tell you, you know, I'm singing Iggle Piggle to myself constantly. But anyway.
Tanya, in fairness, I think you're a bit like me. So I think in some ways, this whole business is a little bit easier for those of us who have a tendency towards that kind of relaxing and not letting, you know, being too hard on ourselves in that way. But I imagine if you're somebody who really does, and I'm not, that's no offense to you, I'm putting myself in the same boat, but you know, you know, to someone, I've been thinking about the people for whom keeping up appearances and doing all that stuff is really important in their psyche and in who they are. And that must be hard. I think that's challenging for those people, which I am not one of. And maybe you are. Maybe you are.
Oh, God, no. I'm like, let it all hang out. You know, I mean, like, yeah, I, you're right. I mean, there's definitely a sense of keeping up appearances. And I suppose people need to go, you know, what are you doing that for? Who are you doing that for? Are you doing it to make yourself feel better? I mean, I always find the social media keeping up appearances is a way to like smooth over a big crack in your life. I know. In my life, when things have been very dark or very down, is the one time I post a lot of selfies, you know. Mm. And I think it's because you need that hit of people going, oh, you're gorgeous, or whatever else, you know what I mean? So when I see people doing a lot of that, I'm like, okay, maybe all is not quite as it seems in their lives at the moment, you know, and they do need that, you know, kind of validation from other people, you know. So
yeah, I get that. I just put up a picture of myself in plaits because it was the first day I actually felt that I was looking kind of presentable. And then, of course, my kids pointed out that the whole back of my hair, where the two plaits are separated, is completely white grey, you know. So that was lovely. That gave me a land. From the front, when I'd sprayed my L'Oreal root thing on the front, I kind of looked vaguely okay. And then I turned around and they were just laughing at me. But as they said, who's looking at you, back or front, Mum? You know, I was like, oh yeah, fair enough. You wouldn't get a big head in this house, is all I'm saying. But But Tanya, tell me this, because these are the conversations I'm having with friends at the moment. Are you learning anything about yourself as a matter of interest, about who you might be after this? And it's fine if you aren't, obviously, as we said, nothing. There's no rules in this scenario.
You know what I think I'm learning is that I don't have a great constitution for crisis. I know that sounds silly, but I mean, I kind of panic. I mean, I am not a very, I don't mean this to kind of put myself down, but I'm not a very strong person. I mean, I kind of went at this with a bit of a panic and a bit of a, I don't want to do this, you know, and a lot of people kind of took this on the chin and were very pragmatic. And I can't say I was one of those people. So, I'm not a great person in a crisis. I think I learned that about myself and I'm fine with that. You know, I mean, we can't all be great, you know, in that regard. I'm great in other ways.
Yeah, I'm going to give myself a few pats on the back because I've always suspected that I'm great in a crisis. I've always had that as one of my things. You know, I nearly drowned. I really very came close to dying twice in my life in water, and I didn't die. And a couple of other things that have happened to me where I've been subsumed by this overwhelming sense of calm at the time when it should have been the most panic-filled moments in my life. And I am feeling that now. I am doing the snarky thing, and my kids were telling me I'm shouting more than usual, and there's a lot of stuff going on. But on another level, I do have that feeling like, okay, we just need to get through this. And I did adapt quite well. So on that front, I have to say to myself, okay, that's a good thing to find out about yourself, to have confirmed, you know.
Totally. Yeah, I like that. That's a good thing. And hopefully that moment of calm will come my way one day, you know.
But I think it is all phases. Like I definitely am in my kind of angry, shouty phase. And my mom has come into this phase of acceptance. She was telling me the other day, whereas she was ringing me up for a few days in a row and she was kind of not raging against it, but she was saying things like, I'm very bored, or, you know, I this and that, the other. And she's come through that now into the kind of gratitude and acceptance bit. I think it is fake, Tanya. I think you will find that at some point you will have come into that kind of more resolute type of bit of it.
Yeah.
It's different, you know.
I should think it's not even linear. I'd say you just have bad days and good days and they're piled up, or even bad hours and good hours piled on top of each other. And, you know, that's grand. I mean, I have a friend that I'm talking to and, you know, she's saying, you know, I had a couple of great days and then I had a bad day. And she felt it was a setback, and it was like, well, it's actually not, you know. I mean, it's just completely normal to oscillate between the two wildly varying emotions, you know, between panic and upset and anxiety, and then kind of an acceptance, and even the odd moment of, gosh, I think I'm actually doing okay at this, you know. So, but I'd say, you know, I don't know if it's a linear thing. I'd say it's fairly cyclical, to be honest.
Absolutely. And listen, I'll come back to you in a couple of weeks and see if you're still there, or if you how you're doing, if you're still got a partner living with you in the place, or whether he's had to relocate.
I might be living on my own. Exactly. Yeah, having a great time, I'll tell you.
Tanya Sweeney, thank you very much.
Thanks, Roisin.
That was Tanya Sweeney there. Now, she was talking about people living their best lives in a pandemic, which not all of us can do. But there are also some people using their frustration to help others. And cookbook author and influencer Roz Purcell is one of those. I spoke to her about life in lockdown and about how she's managing to raise money for people on the front line using her contacts and her skills. Roz, how are you getting on under lockdown?
You know, I think the first few days were really tough, and I'm sure it was the same for everyone. I think was taking in so much information. So not only was I trapped in my house, not really being able to go about my normal routine, but I had this overwhelming cast of information that was, you know, creating a lot of anxiety and sadness coming at me as well, and not being able to, you know, see my family or call over to my sister's house. So the first few days were definitely tough, but I think every single day I'm getting a little bit more positive about it, in terms of like I'm lucky that I live in a lovely house in a nice area, and should we have mobile phones, we can all keep in contact with each other. So I'm definitely in and out. Like I have, you know, moments where I read something bad on Twitter or think worst case scenario, and then I kind of come out of it and I just get on with my day. So above all, I'm trying to find things to distract me from the kind of little bit of stress and anxiety that's floating around. But yeah, I think it's going to be a long, tough time for all of us. But hopefully at the end, as a community, we'll definitely be a lot stronger.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. Do you live with your partner, Roz?
I do. And it's definitely testing us. It definitely is, you know, because I think I'm definitely someone, and I think anyone can, if you know me, you can probably guess this. I like to be really active. I'm very sociable. I love being around people. I love a routine. And I've always been one of those people that my routine kind of keeps me going. And this has kind of totally shifted everything and thrown everything up in the air. And Zach is actually quite happy to sit at home and work, and, you know, it's not really bothering him. So we're like yin and yang at the moment. But yeah, we've created a work colleague called Linda. So anytime there's something to give out about, I'm like, Linda left the dishwasher door open again. I almost fell over. Jeez, Linda, would she ever stop? And, you know, Zach's the same, like, Linda never cleans up after her. So we kind of blame someone else, because we kind of feel like if we really start going at each other, it's going to be a long time for both of us. So yeah,
I think, Roz, that's genius. I think we all need a Linda in our lives at the moment, because I'm certainly finding I'm even more tetchy than usual. I'm kind of tricky at the best of times, but I'm finding myself getting kind of annoyed. So maybe I'll have to invent Linda and blame everything on her, and that will be better. I like it.
It actually creates a bit of a laugh as well, because, you know, when there's something that, you know, maybe your partner does, or your friend, whoever you're living with does, and, you know, you might only notice it now and again, but obviously with these confinements, you're realizing they actually do it quite a lot. So it is kind of funny, because you're not directing the comment at them, but then they kind of subtly know, like, please stop doing that.
Well, listen, I want to talk to you. I think the way a lot of people are keeping their mind off things is trying to do stuff for others. And you have done that. You've launched the fundraiser, Feista.
Yes, it's Feista.
Feista.
I think
I got it right.
Wherever you are all over Ireland, I think we have different pronunciations, especially in Gaeilge. So you can get away with saying a few different variations of it. So yeah, I guess the first few days I was, like I said, in panic mode, and I definitely needed something to work on and distract me, because I was just worrying about everything. You know, you're worrying about not being in control of the future, you know, things that are completely rational and irrational all at the same time. So I just started working on a little project. It was creating a downloadable cookbook that people can get straight onto their phones and laptops. And it's a coming together of lots of different Irish cooks and chefs, and they're two favorite recipes that they think people will enjoy now that we're all stuck at home baking. And yeah, it's just in aid of the Mater and Mercy Hospitals, and it's a non-restrictive fund, so it goes to wherever the money is needed over the coming months. I think, you know, obviously with COVID-19, there's going to be a huge weight on the hospitals, not only in ICU, but there's going to be people with serious illnesses that will need continued treatment anyway, whether that's stroke or chemotherapy. So the money goes wherever it's needed to make sure care can be given wherever it's needed.
So it's called FASTA, a home cooking collection of recipes for the Mater and Mercy Hospitals. You can download it for €5. And like you say, you can get it onto your phone. And that is a brilliant thing, the fact that the money will go wherever it's needed. Because sometimes you worry that a lot of money is collected for one specific thing, and then it doesn't get to where perhaps it could be better used.
Yeah. And, you know, as someone who pretty much all my family is high risk, one of my sisters has cancer, the other one is just about to give birth. So there's so many people in society that have underlying illnesses and will continue to need treatment. So it's really important that they can still get the same level of care. So it's great to have a fund that it can go wherever it's needed.
And have you any idea of how much you've raised so far, or how much you hope to raise?
So far it's been 25,000. Wow. And yeah, and it's great because I keep saying, I'm like, if this was a real cookbook, it would be a bestseller right now.
Now listen, tell me what recipes did you put in, and also I want to know what your own kind of healthy snacks are that you're cooking up most for you and your partner.
So I actually put three recipes in because I guess I created the cookbook, so I snuck a few extra in. I put in wholemeal scones because I think a lot of us are going back to nostalgic recipes, and from me, wholemeal brown scones was definitely one of them. I also put in an all greens soup, so like a super green soup, because a lot of us are quite conscious that we're still getting a lot of vegetables in, we're eating nourishing foods for our immune system. And number three, I put in a really good homemade pizza because, you know, none of us are allowed to get our takeaways now, so I had to put in something like a fun pizza you can make with the kids.
Okay, people are still getting takeaways, I think, though, are they?
Yeah, but I don't know, maybe if you're like me, I'm kind of the hyper level conscious where I'm not really going out to get anything or getting anything to the house unless it's a necessity. I'm quite conscious because I'm doing my shopping for my sister, so I really don't want to get anything into the house unless it's a complete necessity.
Oh, fair enough. So some of the contributors to it are the Little Green Spoon, Susan Jane White, who's been on the podcast before, who's great. I actually have her fudge, her halva fudge in my freezer. We made it the other day and it's just a lovely sweet snack to have. James Kavanagh, The Happy Pear, Bread 41, Donal Skean. So you've got some great names. And are there people being added to it all the time?
Well, that's actually a good idea to add to it, but then I'd have to go back and send everyone the PDF. And to be honest with you, I will say one thing. I'm like Zoolander with when it comes to tech and stuff. So for me to even put this together, I was like, oh, I'm so proud of myself, because you don't realize, like, some people might say putting a PDF is so easy, but there's a lot to it, you know, and it probably took me a lot longer than it would take someone else. So, yeah, I'm trying to make this as simple as possible for myself. But yeah, so it is great because, you know, I got a few new recipes off lots of other foodies to try myself at home. And right now, I think a lot of us, we are depending on cooking. I know myself, I always cook, but I'm definitely cooking a lot more. I'm cooking 2-3 recipes a day. And it is definitely a mix of kind of nice and healthy recipes, and then a lot of kind of comfort indulging food, because I know for myself, sometimes food is that little comfort that we do need, whether it's late in the evening and you're after consuming lots of news, or, you know, you're worried. It's kind of nice to sit down with a big muffin and just forget your woes. So I definitely am having a nice balance, because a few people are messaging me asking, you know, what healthy snacks you have. And I'm like, I'm kind of making muffins and like cream donuts and stuff, because right now I think I need all those nostalgic flavors and, you know, those kind of things that, you know, make me feel good, because it is a time where food is and cooking is a really good outlet to just, you know, have a bit of creativity, work with your hands, be present, and then enjoy something and take your mind off everything else.
And listen, what about your mental health and physical health? Are you doing much exercise? It doesn't sound like you're going out at all. So how are you maintaining that? Because I know that's an important part of your life as well.
So I do home workouts, and I actually usually do them live so people can just join in with me.
Oh right.
And then I learned talking and exercising is so much harder. I have a newfound respect for any personal trainer. So I actually did I have a personal training degree, diploma, whatever it is. So I trained as a personal trainer before, so that's why I just said, you know what, I'm training myself at home. If other people want to join in, they can. So I do that at 8 a.m. and, you know, obviously I have a little dog, so I do bring my dog for, there's a park behind the house, and I go hurling with him just to get him some fresh air, and he just sprints back and forth, and, you know, that's kind of my bit of fresh air as well. So yeah, a really important part for me is to just have that, keeping somewhat of a routine. So getting up, going to the gym before I do anything else almost makes me feel like I'm having somewhat of a normal day.
Okay. Now, just to back to the book, tell people how they can get it. It's called FASTA, a home cooking collection for recipes for the Mater and Mercy hospitals. How can people get hold of it?
So they can go onto the GoFundMe page. If you just look up FASTA cookbook on GoFundMe, you'll get straight to the link. You donate €5. And then you just email your receipt to fastacookbook@gmail.com. All the information is on that page, and the PDF is sent directly back to you straight away, and you can download it from there.
I am very impressed with your tech skills, Roz, and I think all our tech skills have been, you know, going to new heights in this time. I'm in my bedroom recording this with my feeling very proud of myself. But listen, wish you all the best, and thanks for doing something so great, so worthwhile while you're in that state of anxiety. And like, I do think when you have the amount of people you have in your life that are that you're worrying about, it adds a whole other level, you know. So it's great that you've been able to channel that into something very positive.
Yeah, thank you so much, and stay safe and keep cooking. Yeah. And I hope you enjoyed the book as well.
Will do. I'm going to go and get it now. Thanks, Roz.
Thanks.
The Irish Times Women's Podcast is brought to you by Green and Black's Velvet Edition, sumptuously smooth dark chocolate. That was Roz Purcell there. Now, this is not a time to be a restaurant critic. It's one of those jobs that's definitely not essential these days. But you can't keep a good restaurant critic down. And Catherine Cleary of the Irish Times, having hung up her knife and fork temporarily, has started a food podcast called The Comfort Feed. She spoke to me about that, about feeding her family and being fed by her family. Here she is, Catherine Cleary. Catherine, how are you getting on in lockdown?
Okay, sometimes. And then, yeah, I just nearly bawled crying in a Skype call with an interview that I was doing. She actually missed it up. I haven't cried a lot, actually, weirdly. I think I'm doing that, you know, getting on with the thing. And then she missed it up because she was talking about how lots of people have been telling her, we've got your back. And then suddenly I found myself. So, yeah, I'm good. But then the next minute I'm not. And then the next minute I am. I think that's basically how it is. She also said a very interesting thing. She said, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about this until it's over. I think that's where I'm at with this as well.
Yeah, I don't think you can go into any analysis of it right now because it's just too ever changing and it's too stressful to kind of contemplate it in a big way like that. So I think that's a very good, it's almost like parking it, parking all that emotional response in a way. Later on, I think everyone in this country is going to be going through a certain type of PTSD after this post-traumatic stress disorder, because there's so many. I mean, I feel very lucky. I'm sure you feel lucky too. But everyone in their own way will have something to deal with and get help with afterwards, emotionally.
Yeah.
But for now, all we can talk about and what a lot of people are talking about is food. The reason I wanted to get you on is to talk about our pandemic pantries, or what the woman in England who does all the budget cooking, Jack Munro, calls the lockdown larder. And I think this is something that we can kind of feel we have a bit of control over. So I think we're all creating different variations of a pandemic pantry. What would be your thoughts on that in terms of what people should go and get and what they shouldn't be getting as well, I suppose?
I think we have to be a little bit wary of the sort of social media perfect thing, which is we're all learning that perfect isn't really an option at the moment. So I was very drawn to a list I saw somebody put on Instagram of, you know, here's what you need to buy of all really healthy, great food that will see you through 2 weeks. But I think And everybody wants that simple answer. Okay, I need to make sure that I can cook enough food for 2 weeks for my family. What do I do? And I think if you're very organized, absolutely go, you know, buy Susan Jane's book, Clever Batch, which is all about batch cooking. It's amazing. Buy the ingredients and do 2 weeks worth of cooking of food. But I think if you're more on the fly and you're just trying to get through today, you should probably try and just find something that you really like and you've made before, because it's not really a time, I think, to try and become Ottolenghi overnight. And
that's what I was hoping to do. That's what I wanted to do. What are you saying? I can't do that.
Well, you can, of course, but I think you need to say that that's what you're going to do, rather than I'm going to become Ottolenghi overnight and I'm also going to batch cook enough food to feed a family of five until June, because that's really tall order. And I think we need to stop giving ourselves tall orders at the moment, because it's too hard. No, I think definitely if you're finding it some kind of comfort to be in the kitchen cooking up lots of stews for the freezer, fantastic, go with that. But if you're not, and if it's adding more stress to you to feel, oh, I haven't got a freezer full of stews that's going to feed us till June, then don't get stressed about that. A friend put a really good message on a WhatsApp group, one of my favorite of the WhatsApp groups, where she said, okay is the new brilliant. So if everything's okay, if everybody's, you know, alive and well and has eaten that day, then I think that's brilliant for any family to be achieving at the moment. And then the other the other side to that is if you do want to make food your project, there are fantastic resources there. There are amazing YouTube videos or cookbooks or anything that you can dip into. And it is really satisfying to step away from the screens and just chop an onion or, you know, slowly, like cook your onions really slowly. That would be my tip at the moment because the smell is amazing. The flavor is great. You know, just slow it all down and luxuriate in the sensuality of cooking. If that's your thing. But the other thing is don't feel guilty if it's not, and don't try and make it your thing because, you know, there's some sort of Instagram perfect world that you feel you need to be part of. The other thing that I'm slightly wary of is this idea of, well, involve your children in making meals, which is, again, wonderful if you're in the headspace for that. Actually, my 10-year-old made muffins yesterday all by himself because we were all just too busy to do anything, and they were great. But there was a massive cleanup afterwards, and I'm not sure if everybody's stress levels can cope with, you know, a 6-year-old trying to chop a tomato with a butter knife or whatever it is that you have to do to get a child involved in getting dinner on the table. I'm very much a let's just get dinner on the table merchant. And also, I think we have a lot of spouses at home now as well, so let's involve them too.
Exactly, who might not normally be there, because I know you work at home generally anyway, so you're there a lot, and there's people in the house in the daytime that weren't there before, and make sure that they're kind of as much part of it. Do you know, going back to the slow thing, I love what you're talking about, saying slow onions. I'm going to try that tonight just to fill the house with that smell. But also, because you're always going on about eggs and how eggs are a great thing to have, do you know what I wish everyone would try, because I only just discovered it before all this thing kicked off, which is really, really, really slow cooked scrambled eggs are the most delicious thing on earth, which I never knew. I was always a real, oh, get the scrambled eggs made, and they were grand. But since I discovered a really low heat for scrambled egg, and it could take 20 minutes or something for them to get done, and they're just spectacular. Do you know the science behind that, Catherine, or anything? I just found...
Yeah, I think anything slowed down. I mean, Michael Pollan in his lovely book, Cooked, you know, if you're looking for a food book to read Cooked by Michael Pollan, where he goes through all of the different kinds of cooking routines. And he talks about at one stage, you know, the kind of chef world where everything's chopped really finely and then everything's fired over this high heat. And his mentor for that book, whose name escapes me completely, she's the woman who went on to make that wonderful Netflix show, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. Again, if you want food. She was always giving out to him for having heat up too high, frying his onions. So basically turn your heat to the lowest setting and let the onions fry for 20, 25 minutes. And they just turn into this kind of delicious goo with butter, olive oil. And it just, yeah, I think everything gets better when you do that. So take that approach to all of it. Slow. Don't burn your onions. Don't blast anything through anything. All of that slow stuff. I mean, I've never done that with eggs. I'd be interested to give that a try.
Catherine, I'm so glad to give you a tip. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Loads of butter. Obviously. Have you seen Nigella Lawson on Twitter at the moment? She's fantastic. And she's basically like just going, always with the butter, the butter. She just keeps saying it. It's brilliant. Now, Catherine, you said you made a clay volcano with your children, but you've also been making something which I think is a service to the whole nation. McDonald's has closed and you reverse engineered a Big Mac. Tell us about that.
I did. I had a whole paragraph in my piece saying about how I tried to persuade the editor who was asking me to do this, but could I not make like amazing beef from Sligo and a brioche bun, like a gourmet version? Like, yeah, that's fine, but make us a Big Mac. So I said, okay, needs must, the new normal, and looked at YouTube. I said, where do I start? YouTube is the answer to everything. And the first YouTube video that I looked at, which had 28 million hits, I thought, oh, this is great. This is like obviously the best version. If you do a YouTube search, you'll get, it's the top one that comes up. It just shows somebody mashing raw mince into a burger and then mashing a whole iceberg lettuce and hitting it with various bits of bought McDonald's and mashing it all together, and it's soundless and all you see is somebody's hand, and that has had 28 million hits, which I think tells us a lot about what it is that people want from recreate a Big Mac at home thing. Anyway, there is a much better video which I then followed and was surprisingly easy. The secret of recreating a McDonald's burger, any kind of burger, is the sauce and the ingredients are in that Irish Times recipe. None of them are healthy or in any way good for you, or but they do have, the chef explains it, it's that contrast between tartness and sweetness and creaminess, and you get it in the sauce, and as soon as you taste that sauce you go, oh yeah, that's McDonald's. It's really amazing. If you want to have that sensation, just make the sauce. If I'd been in the studio with you, I would have brought in my leftover secret sauce to you.
You might have to do a drop, just leave it outside your door and I'll come and pick it up, Catherine. Would you do that? I'm not actually joking, and you know me, I'm not joking. Listen, you did an amazing job by the looks of it, even though you were a bit resistant, but your one of your sons said it was definitely like a Big Mac.
Yeah, he took a bite. He said, yeah, apart from the fact the iceberg lettuce is a bit too fresh, it's that's it.
But also tell us who you found the video, because it was somebody who actually was a chef in McDonald's. Is that right?
Yeah, this American chef called Dan Coutrote, who's he does it, like, it's 2.5 minutes. You have to stop it 17 times before you even get the hang of it. But he, in response to a question from a McDonald's customer, I don't know when the video was made, it was probably a good few years ago in Canada, he shows you how to make. I felt if I'm going to go to YouTube, I need to learn how to make a Big Mac from a McDonald's chef. So that's what I did. And then I shared it with the readers of the Irish Times. I think I forgot to list cheese in the list of ingredients as well. So it's not the most perfect recipe you'll ever read, but
I think we all know an easy single is the only thing to put on that, really, isn't it?
It has to be an easy single, yeah. Forget any of your beautiful Irish farmhouse cheeses.
No, Catherine, no. There'll be plenty of time for that. Listen to me, you are not doing the restaurant reviews anymore for obvious reasons, but you've now started your own podcast, which I think is a brilliant idea for these times. It's called Comfort Eater, is that right?
It should be called Comfort Eater because you're the second person to call it that, but it's actually called the Comfort Feed. We were looking at comfort food, and then we thought actually the comfort feed being a kind of an antidote to your news feed. It's a podcast for pandemic times about food people and how they're coping with things, and great ideas for recipes. And we're hoping listeners will start to flood us with ideas. We've had a wonderful email already, which has led us to kind of think about doing something around dinner parties with Zoom, which is now, again, this thing that none of us, I had never heard of Zoom until a week ago, and now it seems to be just part of the landscape of everybody's life, or lots of people's lives, for keeping in touch. And it's like a Skype thing. And it's all, I think everybody's finding everything's been thrown up in the air and things are being reinvented on the fly, and let's see where this goes kind of thing. And that's what the podcast is. So it's called The Comfort Feed, and go and have a listen.
Okay. Yes, we encourage all our listeners to listen to The Comfort Feed as well as listening to the women's podcast, because there's a lot of podcasts out there and we can get through a lot of them. Catherine, before you go, and thanks for all this great advice. I think you've been really sensible and you made me feel a little bit less stressed. Just that idea that it's just about being okay. There's a lot of overachieving going on my Twitter feed and various platforms where I feel I should be writing a novel, painting pictures, I don't know, hothousing my children in chemistry. I just can't cope with it all. So I put on Twitter the other day, whatever you are able to do is okay. And I think we just all need to keep that in mind as we go through this, really. Otherwise we'll just be exhausted and we're going to burn ourselves out and feel really crap about ourselves.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the last thing anybody wants to feel at the moment is that they're not achieving the perfect, you know, pandemic life, because this is just about looking after each other. There's a great word that I saw this morning. I mean, in a way, social media has been wonderful. There's a great word saying, you know, caremongering. It's about caremongering.
Oh, that's lovely.
And that's also caring about your own mental health. You've got to, you know, put your oxygen mask on first kind of scenario to look after yourself, rather than spinning into a kind of, I'm not doing the pandemic well enough kind of mode. And I think that's where the food thing can be a really good help, in terms of, you know, just make a soup that lasts for weeks and eat it every day, and don't feel like I'm not doing this well enough because I'm eating the same soup every day.
Catherine, I now feel I've been doing this really well, because that's exactly what I've been doing. I have a leek and potato one on the go. I'm about to do a sweet potato and chorizo one. And the idea is that for lunches, we don't have to think, what are we having for lunch? We're just going to have soup. And it's just so much easier.
And you know, the magic with soup as well is that soup can become stoop. You know, the guys in Connecticut, so they have what they call stoop, which was a family recipe where it's like a soup, but it's also stew. So your lunchtime soup that you're having every day can also magically, by the addition of, you know, some meat or some chickpeas or something out of a tin, turn into a stoop or a stew. Soup is probably the get out of jail.
I change it every day. Like I threw in some sweet corn. That made it a sort of a leek and potato and sweet corn soup. And then towards the end, I might add a bit more water and throw in some pasta. So it comes like a pasta soup. so endless opportunities. Yeah.
We need a podcast about this, I think.
I think so. Well, have me on. I'll be a guest on your podcast for the old comfort feed. The comfort feed. See, I got it right there. There you go. Now, I mentioned the restaurants. What is the thing you are going to eat in a restaurant after all this is over? What's your fantasy meal now for all the places that you've been to? Where do you think you'd like to book immediately when things are back? And hopefully the restaurants will be back, because it's obviously a real blow to so many people. But where would you like to go if it was still open when this is all over?
I'm actually dreaming about going to Tremor to visit called the Beach House, partly because it's a little bit out of the glamour of the city, and it's the lovely couple who are behind the fish shop in Beverly Street, and they have just got their hands on this gorgeous looking building. I've seen pictures. Marie Claire did a lovely piece with them in the Irish Times, and there was a lovely photograph of them standing in their dining room, and it looks beautiful, flooded with that kind of beach light. Little Victorian room, and they just do beautiful fish really simply. And they kind of do a fine dining thing in one of the restaurants, and I'm really going to be interested to see what they're doing there. But I can't wait for anybody just to hand me a meal that I haven't cooked myself in any setting. Or actually, well, that's really unfair, because my husband, who is one brilliant cook and has been doing the weekday cooking, normally he does the weekend cooking. So we've been enjoying his weekend cooking on weekdays. So I've had lots of meals handed to me that I haven't cooked myself. But
yeah, I was just going to say that. I was thinking you weren't giving Liam a fair crack of the whip there.
I know, and he deserves a medal at the moment. But I mean, for both of us, actually for me and him to sit down and eat a meal that we haven't cooked ourselves, that will be the truth.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I second that. And maybe we'll have to just go on a little road trip to Tremor after this, Catherine. What do you think?
With a big vat of McDonald's secret sauce.
Okay. Listen, it's been lovely to catch up with you, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for helping us with our pandemic pantries and with everything else. Thanks very much, Catherine.
Brilliant.
And that's it for today. Thank you very much to our guests, Tanya Sweeney, Roz Purcell and Catherine Cleary. Remember, you can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, Acast and all good podcast apps. If you want to get in touch, and we really want to hear from you, we're on Twitter and Facebook at IT Women's Podcast, or email us on thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com. The podcast is produced by me, Roisin Ingle, and by Suzanne Brennan, with JJ Vernon on sound. Until next time, thank you very much for listening.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.